This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next-door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Next up is Bill Botell. Bill is Adjunct Professor, University of New South Wales Strategic Health Policy Consultant. He talks about COVID-19 and he's truthful. He's controversial, but you know, he's well known to our community for his response very, very long time ago in regard to HIV. Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. We're going to be speaking to Bill Botell in about a minute. And actually, Bill had tweeted this morning, he'd said, you'll know that in recent weeks I've been critical of the strategies adopted to prepare for the coronavirus. The tone of my remarks reflected my justified concern, but how and why we got here is now completely irrelevant to the task at hand. And he said, it's what we do from today to bring structure, clarity and control to the national response that will be critical in strengthening that national response to protect all Australians. In this spirit, we must put personal differences to one side and consider a bold reshaping of the response. And look, I think they're great words. You know, Bill provided incredible leadership to us, to the LGBTI community many years ago in being integral and central to the response to HIV/AIDS. And that was a bipartisan approach, and it was world leading, and it was benchmark. And it saved a lot of lives. Good morning, Professor Bill Botell. How are you yourself?
I'm fine, but I've been better in terms of how to spend a Saturday, I can tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Look, I just actually read out the couple of your recent Twitter comments about, you know, where we've been, you know, is not ideal, but it's how we now respond to this situation. And you know, I did note that, you know, you were pretty cross on Q&A on Monday night.
Sure.
I watched it, and you know, I'm of an age where I remember HIV/AIDS. I'm an ex-executive officer of people living with HIV/AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty familiar with what we went through. What was behind that anger, Bill?
My great frustration that the course that we had embarked on had not been thought through properly. It was based on an assumption that the thing could be controlled if it went through the community. And this is an interesting academic line, but when I became more and more clear in my own mind that this was a very wrong course of action to follow, and I would say things and see people and talk and do all the things you would expect anybody to do to say this is wrong, not only did nothing change, but things kept going in the wrong direction. It came to a head on Q&A when I thought, as a matter of principle, we should know how many test kits there were in Australia. And I asked the minister and said, please tell us. You're the minister. And he refused. But all of that secrecy and, you know, the more you see it, the more you realise that things aren't going the wrong direction. Now, I don't impugn the really, even though it might look like I do, the motives and the integrity of anybody involved in this, from the Prime Minister down, I accept that, but I do implore them to now see that it was not thought through properly. We are now facing a very perilous situation, so how we got here is completely irrelevant. We are here, and we have to do things today.
It's what we do now.
Correct.
So where we are now, Bill, do you think that the governments are taking the right steps to protect, you know, the Australian community? Do you think
we have to strengthen the response? I'm very concerned that young people, particularly today, right now, when we're speaking, are not taking this thing seriously. Yesterday, I'm in Sydney. Yesterday, Bondi Beach was crammed.
Yeah.
I'm sure that people went out last night in Melbourne, and the cafes and so on are full of people shoulder to shoulder. If you could go to Italy tonight with this thing out of control, and you could speak to any young person of 4 weeks ago, and they say, "Would you be doing what we did last night in Melbourne?" They would plead with you, tears in your eyes, not to do it.
Yeah.
In America, they would plead. I mean, you know, all I'm trying to say is, that's the trajectory we are on if we don't take resolute and serious action this afternoon to stop doing what we're doing.
So, young
people.
So, Billy,
gyms closed, cafes reorganized. You know, all those things.
In light of the government's not giving that determined advice, Bill, I mean, what would you say that we should be doing now? And if people want to try and put themselves in a situation that mimics a future lockdown, what does that actually mean for people?
Yeah,
and what should they be doing?
I reject the thing of lockdown. It implies like a cyborg army, you know, padlocks you. And certainly, you know, that's an element of what it looked like in China. People's doors welded shut. Well, we can't do that. What we need is people in their hearts and minds to take it seriously at every level, to withdraw for the time being calmly into their homes, to limit all of their personal and physical interactions, have that physical distancing, whatever that is, but very, very, very importantly, to increase their emotional connection. So we might withdraw physically, but we've got all the tools and ability to increase our connection and support and love and empathy with our family and friends and the people in our building, the next door neighbours and all that stuff. That's what we need to do. We need to do it now. We don't need to go to a cafe or a restaurant tonight, but what we should be thinking of in cafes, obviously, is people should be able to call up and deliver food cheaper than any home delivery, you know, at $5 a time. Very importantly, we should listen and learn from what's going on in Europe. And you've got to get on the internet and look at it. Today, very well, commendably, the Chancellor in the United Kingdom announced that the government would take over the payment of wages for everybody, or almost of a lot of people, up to 80%.
Yeah.
Now, that's the sort of thing that ought to happen this weekend, so that people who are worried about their money not being there, or they've got sacked from a job, or they're under threat, or so on and so forth, we've got to do that to restore some order and chaos. But what's needed is to build this up from the ground, and not to believe that it can't happen to you or it can't happen here. The figures overnight here, we're on the wrong trajectory. That trajectory, if we do nothing today, ends us all up in Italy, and not in a nice way, in a couple of weeks. And we can't afford to let that happen without trying every possible thing we can do today to avert it.
So we know, Bill, the things that as individuals we need to do to protect ourselves. I'm in the studio here, and Paul's in another studio.
Mm-hmm.
But I was actually surprised when I came in this morning. I expected the city to be empty, a bit like Christmas morning.
That's right.
But it actually... Okay, it wasn't busy, but there are a lot of people walking around and standing in groups, close groups, talking, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Like, well, we haven't been prepared. I mean, you'll remember back in the days of HIV,
yes.
we prepared people for what was coming, and we said, we don't want this to be a disaster like it is in America or elsewhere. We want to prepare people to take really... what for those days were radical steps. Have condom when you had sex, to not share needles. If you're injecting, for sex workers to do the right thing. Many, many things that in those days, as you'll recall, were extremely confrontational and radical, but they were all right. And the people, understanding the nature and the gravity of the situation, and having had it explained to them by the work that people like you did, and Ita Buttrose and so on, they understood the reasons to do it. Now, when you come into the studio this morning and you see that, it's not the fault of the people really, because it is the fault of, it is a reflection of the fact that they have not been communicated with soon enough and clear enough. Because if they had,
they wouldn't be
they
doing
would
it.
Know, they would, should not do it. This is a virus to which we have no immunity that can be picked up pretty easily. I don't know, as a scientific question, I don't think we're clear, but, you know, very, very easily, not very difficult like HIV. So it's different.
Bill, what sort of messaging would you advocate? What sort of messaging would you advocate that we need to be hearing from our leaders to actually get the message across to people just to stay away from others?
Well, the message from people should be to withdraw into your homes, to stay there, to hunker down, you know, watch the television, be in touch, be connected, and be there for as long as it takes to get through this dangerous phase. And then, obviously, the schools have got to be closed. That can't go on. But they should be repurposed so they become childcare centres for children of essential personnel, not just the doctors and nurses and the frontline workers and so on, but people who run the power stations and the transport systems and the sewage and those things. But we reduce greatly, greatly, greatly the congregation of people in schools, because it can affect young people. Regrettably, I saw yesterday in Adelaide that a teacher who had coronavirus had given it to a child. So that's the reason that shouldn't go ahead. And that's got to be done. That's they're shutting schools in the United Kingdom and everywhere else. 100 countries have shut the schools. Well, I don't think it should be the 100. It's regrettable going to be the 101st, but that's the truth of it. And it's not me. I want to make it clear to you, this is, my anger was frustration, but I'm not panicked. It's not the zombie apocalypse. It's a silly old virus, but we've just got to take every measure now, and we can come through this quicker and better and come out the other end better than we would if we don't take the measures today that are needed.
Bill, just another question for you. In terms of testing, and I know you asked a really good question on your Q&A there, but should we be start having some sort of formulaic mandatory testing for some parts of our society to try and really understand exactly how far the virus has already spread? Is that a possibility?
Well, Dr. Tedros, the boss of the World Health Organization, his view is test, test, test. Now, to test, because testing gives you facts and figures, and we are in short supply of facts and figures about where it is. The caseload today is obviously only a fraction of the caseload that exists because it reflects the situation of a week or two ago. You know, you only come forward to be on the books, as it were, but you've been exposed and you're shedding virus for days or weeks, right? So we need to get those facts and figures. To do that, we need to know clearly how many tests there are in Australia and how they're being applied. Then we need to get more tests. And people are doing an enormous amount to increase the availability of testing. I think it would be critical in the weeks to come that we have that ability to test all the way along. I don't think we have it as we should at the level today, but if we organise ourselves, we can do that. But most importantly, for people now in this situation of worry and concern, just limit your exposure to everybody, physical exposure. There should be no gyms open in Melbourne. There should be any opportunity where there are congregations of people. The virus doesn't know what's essential and non-essential. It doesn't know your motivation, right? It didn't get the memo. And like the HIV virus, it doesn't understand English or any other language. It just goes about its business. So the fewer people you are in physical contact with from now, the greater your chances of not getting it, the greater your chances, if you have it, of not passing it on, and the more robust and better off we'll all be if that happens. But we do have to reach out to the poor and the vulnerable and our grandparents and people who are worried and so on and so forth to help them through what's going to be a very regrettably rocky couple of weeks to come.
When you look, Bill, at some of the responses, and, you know, I particularly look at Taiwan and Singapore and, you know, to a large Hong Kong, that these are societies and communities that dealt with SARS. Economically, they're not dissimilar to Australia. They're facing the same costs, you know, and the same economic disruption that we're facing, yet they seem to be coping much better. Granted, more confined area that they're dealing with, but, you know, what can we learn from those countries and what can we learn from, you know, other countries around the world that are actually doing it much, much worse than we're doing it?
Well, rule number one, learn from the countries that are doing it well and not emulate the policies that didn't work in the countries that are being engulfed by it. It can be done. They just in Asia, Hong Kong, Taiwan especially, South Korea after Rocky Start, they got on top of it by taking it seriously. And they mobilised from January.
Yeah.
And they said, my goodness, we've seen what's happened in China, we don't want that to happen here. And they took a lot of stuff to suppress the chance the virus would get in. And, you know, that was the right way to do it. And they accumulated test kits, they accumulated equipment, they mobilised the people, they took them into the secret. And anybody who's been through Singapore in the old, you know, in the last several months would know how rigorous they are about temperature testing and so on and so forth. And if you went into Singapore, every building you were in was temperature tested, the transport was sanitised and cleaned, all of it was being mobilised, and there'd been, the outcome of that has been very low levels of cases, obviously low levels of deaths, and, you know, they bought time. Where all of this goes is, I'm not God, so I don't know. I mean, you know, did they delay things and it will get worse? I don't think so. Really, but you don't want to find out, you know. It's an interesting question to figure out, well, if you do all of that, when might you get a hit? But certainly in the countries that just said she'll be right, whatever the Italian is for she'll be right. You know, I'm going off to the beach for the weekend or to the soccer 5 weeks ago was wrong. And I think we, as I said, the people who should have done all of this just didn't quite grasp the magnitude of the threat, and certainly not the magnitude of the job that would be required as we are today in Australia, when we're on a very rocketing steep curve, and it's seemingly come to the people out there out of nowhere, and they still don't quite grasp it. Now, all I got angry about, and I realise I've been impolite, to put it mildly, and the tone a bit over the top, and I understand all of that, but it's born out of a genuine frustration. But my deep concern, as you will remember, that we must do everything to stop our people from being infected or in hospital, and do it, and we can do it relatively now, you know. Still, we can do it relatively easily if we just take sensible measures to at this stage.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. We're speaking with Bill Botell, adjunct professor, University of New South Wales. Bill, I remember from the HIV days that we came up with some really good slogans for people, and one that I loved. And you know, there's a bit of a warning here to people. Some people may not like it. It was, come on me, not in me.
That's right.
And I would say, we need one for sneezing or something. But I remember that, and people would remember it, and they go, that's shocking, but, you know, they never forgot it.
Yeah, well, short, punchy messages work.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the truth. And, we've needed that all the way along, really, that we could have those messages that people would start to get through to people. And there must be advertising people and others who couldn't do that now, you know. That's we live in a world of memes and so on, so there's probably not one unified sort of communication, but the general ideas, right?
Is it too harsh to stay in, stay alive?
seen so large. Wonderful.
There you go.
I'll patent that immediately.
There's the first one.
Done.
Stay in, stay alive. That's great.
Yeah, like
that. That's really good. Yep. I love it. And that's exactly, I'm going to use it, stay in, stay alive.
There you go. We expect to see that on Twitter any moment, Bill.
Hashtag joy.
That's great. I love that, you know. And that's, but it's a simple message, and right at the moment it's the most appropriate message. I do think reaching out to people is important.
Yes.
I'm very concerned with cafes and restaurants who are losing patronage and so on. It would be very easy to get them to get into the business of home delivery. A friend of mine who runs a bar here in Sydney, you know, drinks delivery, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be quite happy to be here for a while if I could make sure I got a Vietnamese meal delivered and a pitcher of martinis. That'd be good.
Yeah,
Bill, it's very true. I work in the food industry, and there's a lot of switching of products and produce from the food services sector into the retail sector. So, I don't know, great example, we're seeing a reduction in milk being used in cafes for coffees, but we're seeing a lot more going through the supermarkets.
Yeah.
A lot of the restaurants that have been on the social media have been saying, actually, we're open for business, the doors are closed, but you tell us what you want from our menu and you can either come and pick it up in the car, or we'll get someone to drop it around to your house. So I think what you're saying is, let's keep the economy moving, but let's just think about how we do things in a different way.
And how people are going to cope with this. I do have a question for you, Bill. We spoke with John Pizzuto. He's a Victorian politician, ex-shadow attorney general.
Yes,
good guy.
I remember him. Yeah, good guy. Yep.
We're talking about the risk for prison populations, in particular older folk. And, you know, some people have said, you know, you've done the crime, you do the time. I don't agree with that. In that case, staying in will kill you.
I think two things with prison, and Mr. Pizzuto is right. I think all prisoners on remand should be released at the moment.
Yep.
So they should. We've got to diminish that population, and with prisoners, we have two things. Whatever they're inside for, we put that to one side. They don't deserve to be exposed to this, and that's not part of society's requirement for their sentence. So we do have to be very sensible about prisons and have prisoners understand the reasons for social distancing and all the rest of it. Then, of course, with the people who work in prisons and, you know,
of course,
who are there as well as part of the community, they have to be well across all of this sort of stuff. So if we have dramas about it, we've got to think it through. And I know there are people who represent prisoners, who are the warders and who are involved in the correction system. I'm sure they're trying to think very hard about it, but we do need to take those decisions now, today. You know, it's not something we come around for on Monday when we get back to work, but today, this weekend. And I'd hope that the Premier and the Governor of Victoria would would have that on their to-do list for prisons. And people, of course, who are in nursing homes or, you know, other facilities where they don't have freedom or ability around, we've got to be very careful. We have a responsibility of care for those people particularly. And what happens if and when the first coronavirus case turns up in a juvenile detention facility or in an aged care home or an aged care person with dementia, as might happen, then you've just got to have thought before so that you can cope with it without believing it's a zombie apocalypse, you know? There's a measured and calm way to do this, but I think prisons are a big deal. And people who are released, I'd like to see, you know, sustained and intense desanitisation of the public transport system, for example. But, you know, we've got to the truth is, we've got to keep all those essential services functioning so they're there if they're imperatively needed. But truthfully, stay in and stay alive is the word today.
There you go.
I love it.
Look, we're going to have to... Sorry, Paul, you've got another quick question.
No, I was just going to say, it's a great example of someone like Singapore where we could import some knowledge about how do you keep the local infrastructure, like transport, completely sanitised in a time like this.
Mm.
You know, we could do far more in that area, and, it, you know, they're only across the pond. We can actually just say, look, what do we need to do?
So, but we know what's happened.
Great words.
Look, thanks for extending the time you spoke to us, Bill. I'd like to be able to speak to you again, I'm sure, over the coming months, but let's...
Anytime, yeah.
We'll talk offline. We'll make this more regularly.
Coming days and hours and days and weeks, because this weekend is the time, and the listeners have got to understand, don't go to the gym, don't go to the cafes, go home. Get what you need and hoard and, you know, panic buy. And it's not, like I said, it's not the zombie apocalypse, but take it really, really seriously. There should be nobody on the beach. I don't know what the weather's in Melbourne today, but, you know, up here it's really sunny and hot. So don't go to the beach. The virus has no clue.
It doesn't.
As I said before, it didn't get the memo, right? It's just the virus.
and they say...
make its job easier.
You know, the word is stay in, stay alive. And when you're staying in... you can watch The Walking Dead, right? We're not actually living that.
That's right.
Right?
Correct. No, so, you should be in charge of the whole thing. You've got the vision.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for the work you've done over so many decades.
Thank you.
And I acknowledge this morning, I think, you know, you've effectively said, you know, where we were before, let's put that aside.
Yeah.
Let's
put all that aside.
On fixing this.
There's no politics. It's not to score a point off the Premier or the Leader of the Opposition or the Prime Minister. That's all gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I for one, am swearing off it.
Okay.
Right? That was then. Now, this is now.
I'm gonna make a note of that because I know you can get pretty fired up. Thanks so much, Bill.
All right.
Real pleasure. Thanks for your time, and we'll be speaking to you again soon. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers, Bill.
Thank you for listening to Saturday Magazine. You just heard from Bill Botell, Adjunct Professor, New South Wales, University of New South Wales Strategic Health Policy Consultant. He talked about COVID-19, and as always, Bill tells the truth.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.